And welcome to another edition of El Paso Primetime. And it's been a long time since we've had a chance to talk to you. Dr. Richard McCallum from Texas Tech, the School of Medicine. To me, you are the most famous gastroenterologist in the world. Welcome back to El Paso Primetime.
Well, I've missed Call the Tummy, Dr. Dennis. I've missed you and Naomi, obviously, in the El Paso audience. It has been quite a void for me, and I'm glad the studios are being renovated, and I'm glad we're back together on an early stage, and we'll do it more frequently in the future.
Absolutely. Now, in the time that we've been apart and whatnot, you've been involved in several different projects, but the one ongoing thing is the free clinic somewhat. A little bit of an update on that one, please.
We're still alive and well, Dennis, thanks to Rotary, a club of El Paso. We're down there on just off Zaragoza at our clinic site, and the students are amazing. We just actually had a recognition luncheon for them at the Rotary, and we asked them to essentially state what has it meant to their careers to see and be involved with the underserved, underprivileged patients of El Paso. And there they are in their suits and dressed up in their dresses, not down there in the clinic in their scrub gowns and coats. And it reassured me, Dennis, that we are in very good shape. The future of medicine is in very good shape. We have some great students. They have all the right stuff. They really espouse to the Rotary members present for that luncheon last Thursday that the opportunity to serve and be involved with underprivileged patients to try to help restore their health, to be in the firing line, trusted with health care as first and second year students before they're getting into their serious clinical rotation. That's painted a picture for them that will stay with them throughout their training, I think throughout their career. Compassion, commitment, and humbleness in going into medicine for the right reasons. I think it was a very reassuring luncheon, and it's reinforced for me every Saturday. We're in very good shape with the kind of students we seem to be recruiting at Paul L. Foster School of Medicine. Very involved with community, very concerned about patients, and very much committed to improving the health of our citizens.
But it always starts at the top, and of course you're one of several at the Paul L. Foster School of Medicine, Texas Tech, that really aspires to pass the torch of what Hippocrates was really all about.
You're right, Dennis. It started, Dean De La Rosa helped start the clinic with us. His guidance, his enthusiasm, his vision. Of course, we now have more leadership in the form of Dr. Richard Lang, who's our president and current dean, and so it goes down. And it certainly is a culture that's alive and well, and thanks to Rotary, the funding and support allow this clinic to continue. So that's one of the highlights for all of us, is to be around these students. They're the heart and soul of the clinic. So are our social workers. We make a difference in the clinic, Dennis, because we not only see patients who have been out of the medical line, if you like, or out of the usual healthcare stream. Our social workers guide them back to develop a primary care physician, start colon cancer screening, start breast cancer screening, pap smears, diabetic care, hypertension. We need to guide them back into the mainstream. We're a stopgap in the clinic. We meet them on a given Saturday, kind of stop the bleeding. But we need to get them back into mainstream medicine. And our social workers, many from UMC, University Medical Center, we have there just amazing volunteers. Again, they're giving up Saturdays to help get our patients back into the mainstream.
I ran into a group of volunteers about a month ago at the downtown transit center from Texas Tech. Mm-hmm. And they were teaching anyone and everyone who would come in how to do CPR.
Wow.
To me, fascinating. I'd never seen anything like that here in El Paso. The last time I saw anything like that was in Phoenix and in Tucson some 20 years ago, ASU, U of A. Yeah. You've got schools of allied health. Right. So now it's here in El Paso, and you have the same kind of heart and soul.
We have a huge center called the Simulation Center that was founded at Texas Tech. It's the only certified simulation center at a university in the state of Texas. It's amazing, given all the major universities. Dr. Ho, Hoy Ho, was the founder. He had the vision to get that started, along with Dean De La Rosa. And the students learn CPR on site and therefore are very well equipped to follow through and carry on and teach other people. We're involved with teaching first responders, firefighters, police. We provide a service for a lot of people at the center.
Absolutely. What really intrigued me was the fact that these groups of volunteers, there were four of them throughout the whole complex, were teaching bus riders and chefs and caretakers and whomever would come in and ask, hey, what are you doing?
Right.
Come here. Let me show you how to give CPR. And all of a sudden, you know, you're on the floor. You've got the dummy in front of you and a student volunteer teaching you how to do CPR. And to me, that was incredibly amazing on several different levels. And I commend all of y'all for doing that, because the more people who know how to perform CPR, the more lives are going to be saved.
Yeah, and those units are around the place, particularly at airports, you see them. So it's nice to feel like you could actually activate something.
Mm-hmm. There's so much that goes on here in the city, and sometimes we just don't get a chance to touch on all of it. And thanks to your help and support, we really get a chance to take a look inside the Paul L. Foster School of Medicine and see what's really going on. So heading into 2016, since we haven't had a chance to really sit and chat, what are the major things that you're looking at right now that all of the Desert Southwest can look forward to in the next couple of years?
Well, I think Texas Tech, through Lubbock, and obviously we're part of that empire of the Texas Tech school system, they did announce the goals for a veterinary school, probably to be based in Amarillo. So that will be a very important step forward. The only one so far in the state is A&M. And this will not be, in a way, competitive. It's a huge state. So this would be a major addition to have another opportunity to have a veterinary training. A dental school is planned for El Paso. A dental school is planned for El Paso, probably 5 to 10 years down the road, but it's on the books officially. That's exciting we do have another underserved group in the city, and that is dental care is not optimal in that we don't have all the numbers to serve 1 million people. So I think they're big picture things, Dennis. We've got a great graduating class. We just announced the match system, where you match from your final year of medical school. You go into residencies around the country. We had outstanding residency matches, including some staying here in El Paso. And I think in general, we're seeing recruitment coming along at the medical school. Good leadership in departments beginning to develop a depth and breadth, which we haven't had in the past. I'm very excited about that. One of the big things I'd like to bring up for you and the citizens of El Paso, not just the Paul L. Foster School of Medicine, but we had a big commitment in March that culminated in a television production on Thursday night through the El Paso County Medical Society, that March was Colon Cancer Month. And we have to remind people that 1 in 5 of us, Dennis, will die, will get colon cancer in our lifetime. So in 2012, 350,000 people had diagnosis of colon cancer in this country. 350,000, 50,000 died. So that's about 16%. So if we can catch it early enough, we could lower that to 5% or more. So the whole idea is that if you could do screening colonoscopies, which you're supposed to start at age 50, we could start to lower the death rate of colon cancer. It's the second commonest cause of cancer death among males and females combined in this country. Females are not protected. Sometimes people think it's mainly a male disease. No, colon cancer is equally distributed. And currently, even though screening is free, a third of eligible people in this country have not been screened. So here we have a disease which is totally reversible. We look in the colon, we see little pimples, little dots, little polyps, we call them, that are on the colon lining. We take them out and biopsy them. Most times, 80% of the time, they're benign. In that 20%, we catch early malignancy or clear malignancy. We can call our friendly surgeon and do surgery and or chemotherapy and radiation and save lives. So we can't overemphasize the importance of a disease that can be beaten. Simply commit yourself, beginning at age 50, to coming in and getting a screening colonoscopy. It's free of charge. And I can't emphasize that enough. There may be, in the African-American population, we may be asking them to go down to 45 years of age. But that is the commitment now. Beginning at age 50, every 5 to 10 years, a screening colonoscopy. Simple procedure, a little bit of preparation to clean the bowel out, and you're asleep when it's happening. Painless. Cannot overemphasize we can cure this disease. Please, citizens of El Paso, step up and get your colonoscopy.
Those who have questions about getting that colonoscopy, and I know you put the word out there that piques a lot of interest, one called free.
That's right. It's interesting, Dennis, how it started. Katie Couric's husband, Katie Couric in those days on the NBC This Morning Show, developed cancer in his 40s and died quickly over 6 or 8 months. Katie Couric was left with, alone with 2 children. She, in the state of Virginia, where I was at the time, she is a UVA graduate, University of Virginia graduate. So her sister, Emily Couric, was a state senator in Virginia, lived in Charlottesville. So we got together and were the first state to mandate the insurance companies would mandate a free colonoscopy to try to get started on invading colon cancer. And so it started there with Katie Couric and her sister Emily, and it's now spread throughout the country.
My goodness. I knew nothing of that until just now. And it's something that I think that everyone really needs to, it's not necessarily taking advantage of a situation as it is trying to take control of your life.
Exactly. I mean, this is for your loved ones, your family, your legacy, things you're planning for. You could look good. You're exercising. I'm healthy. I'm eating well. I'm not a diabetic. You could be struck down and dead in 6 months. You know, it's silent. We don't often see bleeding in the rectum. We don't see blood in the stool. It can be growing silently and metastasizing, spreading outside the bowel. So we can't emphasize enough that you have to just take the bull by the horns yourself and come and see your doctor. Remind them, just like a pap smear is embedded, breast screening is embedded, colon may be a little bit less politically nice or correct down there in the rectum, but 80% of cancers occur in the colon, which is about 5 feet of your bowel. The last 12 inches at the most is the rectum, and that's about 20% of the colon cancers. But don't let anything about the rectum and the colon distract you. Just take your preparation at night and clean out. Next day, come in and get it. You're asleep, and you'll get good news. We don't see anything. Well, we did see something. We took it out, and it won't become cancer. This is preventive medicine, Dennis. We're taking out little pimples and bumps. We're picking fruit off the tree. We're taking it away so it can't develop into a bigger polyp and become a cancerous polyp. It's a young polyp. It's not malignant yet. We have to get it early and nip it in the bud and stop the growth. That's the whole theory behind screening colonoscopy.
I have two relatives who are going through right now radiation treatment for colon cancers, and they're doing well.
Good.
So it's just a matter of catching everything. And for those who tend to forget that it hits everyone, Farrah Fawcett passed away from rectal cancer.
She had rectal cancer.
Yes.
That's correct. We tend to associate rectal cancer with HIV. It is increased in HIV patients. But rectal cancer is out there, too. That could even be palpable on a good rectal exam by your primary care doctor. Or it could be above that level. But certainly you may see blood in the stool in that case. But often it's silent. And you appear to be in good shape, but there, lo and behold, you are evolving a malignant process.
Okay, so we've got the word out on colon cancer, and just knowing that our audience is going to be hip enough and smart enough to say, you know what, let me go ahead and have that checked out.
Sure. Good.
Know. For men especially who are a little squeamish about having the prostate checked out, well, you know, if you're going to have your prostate checked out, you might as well have your colon checked out as well.
Well, the good news is you're totally asleep, Dennis, and quite frankly, you don't even remember it. I don't even remember my colonoscopy. You're given the good news later. The biopsies come back.
Mm-hmm.
This is really an hour of your time every 10 years.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a seriously good investment.
Yeah, I had one 5 years ago, I understand that one completely. Yeah, matter of fact, I don't even remember how I got home. And that's probably a good thing anyway. But nevertheless, you know, it's just something that we need to do. All of us need to be proactive now. There's no more sticking your head in the sand about this, especially when it comes to cancers. Because now we're in an age where I would say 80% of the cancers are reversible.
That's a good figure to quote, Dennis. You're right. I think we still think we're getting 20% too late.
Right.
So we'd like to get 95% early.
Right.
Before your relative, because getting radiation and chemotherapy means it's spread outside the colon. So we'd like to nip it in the bud even before it's gotten to that point. So this is aggressiveness. Luckily, we've got a very good program in the city run by Dr. Shokar, who has a program where you can, promotoras and others can let you get a fecal occult blood testing, check your stool for blood, and lead you into a screening colonoscopy program. It's called Axion. And she leads that, Dr. Karen Shokar, who's over in the family practice department. But in general, just talk to your family practice doctor, talk to your nurse practitioner, say, I want to get a screening colonoscopy. They will find the pathway to it, wherever it is. Privately, UMC, there are many places where doctors are doing that every day.
We're in-house with the tummy doctor, Dr. Richard McCallum from the Paul L. Foster School of Medicine, Texas Tech, here in El Paso. One of the things I wanted to ask you about, one of our media partners in Detroit, WXYZ, has been following a story about this girl, a 17-year-old teenager, who apparently had a botched appendix surgery. There's thought that perhaps a surgeon may have nicked a nerve. Nevertheless, where this whole thing has now gone over the last 3 or 4 months is accusations that her mother is practicing this thing called Munchausen by proxy. The teenager says no. Child Protective Services in Detroit have stepped into this whole thing. So it's turned into this real disaster. And my question is, number one, how can a layperson actually charge another citizen with such a charge as using Munchausen by proxy? Most people don't even know what Munchausen by proxy is.
Right. So it's a situation where a close relative, a caregiver, usually a parent, is sabotaging every medical approach to try to treat their daughter or their son, and in actual fact is inducing symptoms or somehow interpreting symptoms for the patient. Often is a younger patient who may not be totally able to express themselves, from a younger age and maybe even in their teenage years is so dominated by their mother or parent, it tends to be a mother. So that my daughter has severe abdominal pain, and she coaches the daughter, who says, yes, it's severe abdominal pain, it's down here, we get our appendix out. Then a few months later, we've got unexplained abdominal pain somewhere else. I may be vomiting. Somehow they even can get fevers, or that's hard to believe, and we may have to operate again. Or we don't take the right medication because it's not being given by the parent. Or the parent may even give the child something to drink or take that activates vomiting or symptoms. Or they may contaminate a wound, even with stool or feces, to make it infected. There's been horrendous cases where it's gone around and around and around, and eventually we've had to accuse a parent of sabotaging and manipulating the care of their child. It started with the word Munchausen, which was actually came up in a European case where the patient themselves made a career of going around medical centers with new onset pain that they developed, new dramatic symptoms, often induced by taking substances or inducing fevers or vomiting and getting operated on, getting IV lines started, making themselves kind of the subjects of continuous medical intervention. That was their career, was to continuously be medically intervened on in hospitals and just go on and on and on around the country, always traveling from medical center to medical center sometimes to sabotage and confuse the situation because you couldn't track them. Now at least medical records are better with electronic medical record system. It's harder to sort of hide and escape by not having medical records. But this case is one that astute pediatricians have picked up on, where children never seem to do well. We never find anything. They're operated on. The labs are done extensively. No one ever really has a unifying diagnosis, but the child fails to prosper and seems to be under an amazing amount of control by the mother, who seems to have made a career out of being involved with every aspect of the child's waking life and is obviously too involved. And this is seen even by an amateur psychiatrist who's a pediatrician looking after that family, that bells begin to ring, particularly when there's no unifying diagnosis, there's no objective data. What are we treating here? And it seems to go on and on and on. We never come to closure. So this is Munchausen by proxy, rare, dangerous. It wrecks lives. It wrecks doctors' relationships. It wrecks hospitals. I mean, these things, you know, have a life of their own and a very, very dangerous situation to be in, and obviously one that requires a huge amount of data collection, a huge amount of very careful, thoughtful approach before you even mention that word, because that just sets off alarms everywhere.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, evidently the next court case for this 17-year-old teenager, the next court case is coming up on April 20th, and so it looks like the entire world will be focusing in on Detroit to see how this case is going to come to be.
We read about them all the time, Dennis, these cases. Often they end up with people requiring intravenous support called parenteral nutrition. They sometimes can't eat because their GI tract somehow doesn't work. Others have pain out of proportion to any objective data. They're on high-dose narcotics, and they can't function or work. They're left to the dependence of their family because they can't leave the house to work again or finish school. So it's often a very vicious circle. You may get some homeschooling and stuff, but it's a control thing. And we never really know what goes on. We don't have a video camera in the room every day, but we never know. So these cases are often, sometimes they're just wonderful mothers and parents who want to do the best for their kids, but we wonder sometimes whether it's gotten out of control. Mm-hmm. And this is a subtle situation.
It's a curious situation to be sure, and yep. We will keep you updated next time that we come back around. Which leads me to the next thing. Until our studios are ready, we'll be recording more shows.
Sure.
So why don't we do this? We have an email address that's set out specifically for this program. It's called elpasoprimetime@gmail.com.
Okay.
So why not let's invite our listeners to submit questions to you, the tummy doc.
Ideally.
And we'll just send them to elpasoprimetime at gmail.com and make sure that it goes to the tummy doc. We'll forward everything to you. The next time we meet up, we'll go ahead and address some of those emails.
Yeah, please do, Dennis. I sensed a great deal of interest from our audience during our live shows. I think there's a lot of good GI questions and stomach questions out there, even general medicine questions, that I'd be glad to give an opinion of, certainly not replacing the need for their own physician who knows them well and gets to know them well versus myself who's getting a snapshot of their life. But certainly I'm glad to help these folks in town, and I'd look forward to hearing their questions. And maybe you could repeat that email address, Dennis, so we have some questions for our next show.
Absolutely. And all it is elpasoprimetime at gmail.com. Make sure that all of the correspondence goes to Dr. Richard McCallum, the tummy doc. And we'll go from there. We'll forward everything to Doc. And next time we meet up, we'll start talking about people's issues and concerns, because there are quite a number of them out there.
The gastrointestinal tract, we've got 30 feet, Dennis, to work with, plus the liver and pancreas. And as we've learned already in the shows the last couple of years, the audience has a lot of symptoms and questions, often concerns about their friends and families. And we're glad to discuss those and try to give our best advice.
One of the questions that I remember we touched on just briefly the last time we met up on a live show had to concern itself with fatty deposits on a liver. Why is that so important?
Well, it can be confusing. So there may be a very slight elevation in what's called the liver function tests. We get those on a chemistry profile. And the patients may be told, gee, you could have hepatitis. Maybe this is early malignancy. So we get a liver scan, a CT scan or an ultrasound, and we find a little area of fatty infiltration. It looks fatty because it's a different density. And it's typically a bit of weight gain. It's seen in diabetics particularly. And it's benign. It means nothing. But it can be very alarming in the beginning until put to rest. And because all of us tend to be sometimes have a concern about weight and we may be a bit overweight, fatty liver is sort of almost epidemic in many ways. And the only other concern, Dennis, is that a small subset of fatty liver can become cirrhosis. Even though you don't drink, haven't got hepatitis B or C, it can transition from fatty liver to cirrhosis. And we're trying to understand and learn about why that transition occurs. More common in Hispanic patients than Caucasians. And that's important because a subset of cirrhotics can develop liver cancer. So these are very small numbers all the time, but they're concerns. So fatty liver raises a red flag. Most times it's put to rest, but we worry about transition to cirrhosis and the rare risk of cancer of the liver. So these are the questions that we will have to work with and talk about in the future, Dennis. But in general, it's a benign problem and resolvable with weight loss and control of diabetes, but sometimes can sneak up on us.
Wonderful. So if anyone has any kind of concerns, all they need to do is merely email us at elpasoprimetime@gmail.com. Make sure that all the correspondence goes to Dr. Richard McCallum, the tummy doctor. We will forward it to him. And the next time we latch up, Doc, we'll have a darn good show again.
Looking forward to it, Dennis. I've missed you very much and missed the audience. Thanks very much for your patience out there, and look forward to chatting in the future.